Thoughts and Answers begins right now.
You're tuned to Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Palm Sunday, when Christ entered Jerusalem on the colt of a donkey, was the grand moment in the history of the nation of Israel, and the world was long waiting for. What was the significance of this moment? Why was it such a tragic moment for the nation of Israel and the world? During our time together today, Pat explains the importance of Palm Sunday and why the triumphal entry ended in one of the greatest tragedies for Israel and mankind. Now with part one of this two-part message is our host and teacher, Pat Zukeran.
And today we celebrate an event known as Palm Sunday, or also known as the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. But what actually began as a triumphal ceremony actually kind of ends in a tragedy. Right now, this is the Passover. This is the third trip that Jesus makes to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. The first time he came, he created quite a stir, turning over the temple and chastising the religious leadership. The second time he came, they were looking for him and they were looking to take him down, but they were not able to. Third time, all eyes are upon him. In fact, he prophesied, John chapter 2, Luke chapter 9, he prophesied that he would suffer his death on this third and final trip. But the Passover, one of the most significant festivals on the Jewish calendar, is at this time, Jews from all over the world would come to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. The population of Jerusalem at this time is about 30,000. But at Passover, it swells to over 150,000, right? That's why there's hotels. They are hard to find. That's why Jesus and his disciples are out sleeping in the Garden of Gethsemane. That's where they spend the nights. You can't get a place to stay there in Jerusalem. And there's an anticipation that the Messiah would arrive. Prophecies that we're going to look at, we're all pointing that somewhere around this time, the Messiah is to appear. And we can look at the Jewish writings at that time. I'll show you a few of them. They were anticipating somewhere around this time, the Messiah is coming. So could it be that this man, Jesus, would now reveal himself as the Messiah who would usher in the long-awaited kingdom of God? Up to this time, Jesus was reluctant to be called the Messiah or anyone to identify him as the Messiah, the coming king. But it's at this moment, on this day, now, he would be proclaiming it loud and clear to the world. He was now coming as the king, presenting himself to the nation of Israel. And if Israel would receive their king on this day, the kingdom of God would be shortly coming. This coming of the king to Jerusalem was the moment all history was pointing to and awaiting. And now that day has come. And if the nation would receive him as their Messiah, the kingdom was soon to follow. So would this be the moment? Well, our account begins in Luke 19, verse 28, at the preparation here. And Luke 19 states, and when he had said these things, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. When he drew near to Bethpage and Bethany at the mount that is now called Olivet, he sent two disciples saying, go into the village in front of you, where on entering, you will find a colt tied and on which one has never yet been ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, why are you untying it? You shall say the Lord had need of it. So those who were sent went away and found it just as he had told them. And as they were untying it, its owner said to them, why are you untying the colt? And he said, the Lord has need of it. And they brought it to Jesus. So Jesus here is a short distance from Jerusalem here, as you can see on this map. Bethany and Bethpage are less than a day's walking distance there from Jerusalem. You see it on the map here. Jesus has his ministry in Galilee and he comes all the way down here. All right. He's at Bethany where he raises Lazarus from the dead. He heals a blind man and he stops here at Bethpage. Right. He stops right at that city before he is going into Jerusalem. He stopped there so the way could be prepared that when he entered Jerusalem, they would know he is now presenting himself as their king. And so that's why he pauses there. And he commanded two of his disciples to find an unridden colt and bring it to Jesus. And he told his disciples, if the owners asks you, what are you doing? Just say, the Lord needs it. And it says here, the disciples found the colt, just as Jesus told, and the owner comes out. And sure enough, he asks, why are you untying the colt? And they said, the Lord is in need of it. And the owners understood the meaning of this. This man had the privilege that his colt would be the animal upon which the king would ride and enter Jerusalem and claim his throne. And Jesus was fulfilling the prophecy of Zechariah 9, verses 9 and 10, which predicted this is how the Messiah would come and enter the city of Jerusalem. Zechariah 9 says, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter. Behold, your king is coming to you. Righteous and having salvation is he, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. So Jesus fulfills the prophecy there in Zechariah 9, but that's one of many prophecies that Jesus fulfills. J. Barton Payne, in his great book, The Encyclopedia of Biblical Prophecy, one of the best books there, records that Christ fulfills over 100 prophecies made of him before he set foot upon the earth. That is absolutely astonishing. There is no one in the history of the world that has such a prophetic legacy. No one even comes close, all right? From his lineage to the city from which he would be born, exact things about his life, that he would be betrayed and sold for exactly 30 pieces of silver. He would die like a criminal, but be buried in a rich man's tomb. The exact date of his death, his resurrection, on and on and on and on and on. The manner in which he would be born. Over 100 prophecies he fulfills. Peter Stoner did a great work on this years ago called Science Speaks. And he tried to figure out what is the mathematical probability that Christ just got lucky. He was in the right place at the right time. Well, the probability of Christ fulfilling just 8 of these prophecies by chance, he concluded, is 1 over 10 to the 17th power. All right. That's like filling the state of Texas with 2 stories of quarters, he says, and then putting an X on 3 of those quarters. And then I fly you in a helicopter over the state and I drop you off somewhere. And the first quarter you pick up has an X on it. That's how incredible the odds are. All right. That's 8. Okay. What happens when you get to 20? What happens when you get to 30? He says the probability of Christ fulfilling 40 of these prophecies by accident is 1 over 10 to the 157th power, all right? And those of you math majors out there know, Pastor Rogers here knows, that's his background, that's what we call pretty much a mathematical zero. You know, the odds of that are just incredible that he would fulfill these prophecies. I remember on radio, a skeptic called and he said, well, maybe he manipulated and got himself in the right position to fulfill these prophecies. That was Thomas the Atheist, who was a regular caller on our show. The show I did the live show on, we didn't have all the high-tech equipment, so we don't know who's calling. It's just by their voice. And the engineer had to identify and let me know who's calling. So we had Thomas the Atheist, Julian the Apostate, all these regular skeptics calling. And so it was Thomas. And he said, maybe Jesus just got in the right place and manipulated all these things. And I said, if a guy can manipulate his family lineage, if he can manipulate the city in which he would be born, if he can get the whole country to know who he is, very few guys ever get to be known by the country, be hated by the country, and the exact manner of his death. I said, if a guy can manipulate and all that, I said, Thomas, this man is God. You ought to worship this guy. But no one has the prophetic legacy as that of Christ. How many prophecies are there of the coming in the life of Muhammad? 0. They try really hard, John 14, Deuteronomy 18, but it don't work. How many are there of Confucius, Lao Tzu? And you just keep going down the line. No one has the prophetic legacy of Christ. You know, 2 significant ones, Isaiah 53, just that chapter alone, if that is all we had, that's a remarkable, incredible record. There's over a dozen prophecies in there which Christ fulfilled, the manner in which he would live, how he would die, his death, his resurrection are all predicted in that incredible prophecy. Another one is Daniel chapter 9. You know, it predicts the date of his crucifixion. You know, you figure out the mathematics there, the 69 sevens converted from the Jewish calendar of 360 days to our day, and you get somewhere around April of 33 AD is when the Messiah is crucified. Now, through my research, I believe he was crucified on March 31st. Why is that? Well, that's my sister's birthday. All right. And that was the worst day of my life as a little boy when all her friends would come over and torment me all day into the night. But see, 3 days later is April 2nd. Hey, that's my birthday. The greatest day when all my friends would come over and we'd return the favor to her. So anyway, but somewhere right around 33 AD. All right. So even if you don't believe Jesus is the Messiah showed up somewhere around that period. All right. Who best fits the characteristic? In fact, Rabbi Nehumias, in his writings 50 years before Christ, cited by the writer Grotius, he said that the time fixed by Daniel could not go more than 50 years till the Messiah showed up. All right, and that was 50 years before Christ. The Jewish Talmud records that around the time of 70 AD, when Titus destroyed Jerusalem, it was believed the Messiah had come, but his appearance had been concealed until the Jews were rendered more worthy of his appearance. So even they were waiting for the Messiah somewhere right around this time. Two remarkable prophecies made there. And the lesson we learn is that Jesus is indeed the King, the Lord of all creation. His miraculous, sinless life confirms he is who he said he was. He is the King, not only of Israel, but of all of creation. Only an eternal God would be able to see the future perfectly and be able to fulfill prophecy like this 100%. So we move from the preparation now to the parade. Jesus was descending down the Mount of Olives, down towards the Kidron Valley, and then you go up towards Jerusalem. Those of you who are on the Israel tour with Pastor Kevin and I probably remember that march down the Mount of Olives, the Kidron Valley, up to the east gate of Jerusalem. And it says here, and they brought it to Jesus, throwing their cloaks on the colt. They set Jesus on it, and he rode along. As he rode along, they spread their cloaks on the ground. And he was drawing near already on the way down of the Mount of Olives. The whole multitude of his disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. And some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, teacher, rebuke your disciples. And he answered, I tell you, if these were silent, the very stones would cry out. Jesus is descending down the Mount of Olives towards Jerusalem. And there you see, so he's on the Mount of Olives here, and he'd be descending down towards the Kidron Valley and up towards the eastern gate there. So he may be looking at this particular site here. Only thing, it's just lined with crowds. And as he descends down the Mount of Olives, crowd gathered and shouted in praise and spread their cloaks on the ground before him. This was a sign of respect to royalty, all right? Like rolling out the red carpet for a very important dignitary. And the text states, they were praising God for all the mighty works they had seen. The palm branches were waved to greet victorious kings as they returned from battle, marching with their entourage. And the whole crowd began rejoicing and shouting, blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. They're quoting Psalm 118, which is a messianic psalm of praise, a coronation psalm announcing that the King has arrived. All right. This is a coronation psalm when the King returns victorious back to his capital city. This is what the people shout, but they were shouting it now because the king had arrived. Jesus had made it clear he is coming as the king. All the gospels, he demonstrated he is the king of all creation, the Messiah of Israel. All the miracles that he did demonstrate his authority over every realm of creation. His teaching showed he had authority over the law, that he had fulfilled all the prophecies. All right. And during his 3 years, he was saying, people calling him Messiah. He goes, oh, not yet. My time has not come. Well, now the time had come. And he was announcing it to all of Israel that the king, the Messiah, has arrived. And the Pharisees and religious leaders clearly understood what he was saying. That's why they were rebuking his disciples and saying, hey, tell them to be quiet. And Jesus said they did not proclaim he was the Messiah. Even the inanimate objects would. Now, here is the Eastern Gate today. We're looking from the Mount of Olives. This was taken on our last trip here. And as you can see, the Eastern Gate or the Golden Gate that Jesus entered today remains closed, fulfilling the prophecy of Ezekiel 44 that the Eastern Gate would be shut until the Messiah comes. All right, but that's where he goes down the valley into the Eastern Gate. All of history was pointing to this glorious event when the Messiah would come and present himself to the nation as their king. And that day had finally arrived. You know, from the moment that Jesus began his ministry, he demonstrated authority over every realm of creation. He claimed to be the unique divine Son of God, the ruler over all creation. Now, there have been people who have made that claim, but no one has ever confirmed it through the miraculous, sinless life, death, and resurrection as Christ did. His legacy of prophecy is truly supernatural and remarkable. He demonstrated he could heal disease. He demonstrated power over nature. He demonstrated authority over the spiritual realm, over the angelic and the demonic. Right before, just a few days before, there in Bethany, he raised Lazarus from the dead. And that guy was dead. All right. He had been dead for several days. Christ raised him from the dead. He demonstrated supernatural knowledge. He knew about people before he even met them. He even made prophecies, one of which we'll look at, which have come to pass. He demonstrated the power to create, feeding the 5,000. Through all this, he was demonstrating, I am the king. I'm the king over all creation. I have authority over all creation. What's unique is that legends and folklore take over 80 to 100 years to develop. We as archaeologists and historians know that because all the eyewitnesses have to die and pass away from the scene. Men who can verify the accounts as true or false must pass away before legends can start to creep in. The Gospels are written 10 to 30 years after the life of Christ, well within the lifetime of the eyewitnesses. The preaching of the miraculous life and resurrection of Christ just 40 days after the empty tomb. Way too short for legends to develop, right? If a month after JFK's assassination, I went into Dallas and I said, John F. Kennedy died, he was taken to Parkland. 3 days later, he rose from the dead. He preached at Prestonwood Baptist, First Baptist, City Hall, and did all these miracles and ascended to heaven. My preaching, my teaching wouldn't last 1 hour until they threw me out of the city. All right, these guys are preaching that this Jesus Christ performed all these miracles. He was crucified, he died, he rose in the very city of Jerusalem, in the midst of the enemies who had just crucified Christ. Their message could never have lasted had they not been true. Through his miracles, demonstrates authority over all creation as no one else has. How many miracles does the prophet Muhammad do in the Quran? None. The people demand, they say, show us a sign that we may know you are the prophet of Allah. But the prophets are confirmed by miracles. He doesn't do any. He says, well, look at the Quran. That is enough. How many do we have of Confucius? Zero. Of Lao Tzu. Of the Buddha. The earliest writings we have of the Buddha, 400 years after his life. Zero. Only one man confirmed his claim to be the unique divine Son of God, through his miraculous life. And Jesus said, if these people do not say, do not shout my praises, the very stones will. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul says, one day, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess, Jesus Christ is Lord. Some, the saints of glory, when they see Christ, will shout, Jesus Christ is Lord. Those who have opposed Christ, even they will bow the knee. Through anger and gritted teeth, even they will admit, Jesus Christ is Lord. Now, this glorious day doesn't end in triumph, actually. Kind of ends in a tragedy. Sometimes I wonder why the scholars call it the triumphal entry. I wonder if we shouldn't be calling it the tragic entry. It says that as Jesus neared Jerusalem, he wept over it, saying, would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. For the days will come upon you when your enemies will set up a barricade around you and surround you and hem you in on every side and tear you down to the ground, you and your children within you, and they will not leave one stone upon another in you, because you did not know the time of your visitation. As Jesus nears Jerusalem, he wept over the city because he understood what was happening. The king had arrived. And if Israel would just embrace and receive their king, the kingdom was coming. However, they rejected their king. And now instead of the kingdom would come the judgment. Instead of announcing the blessing upon the nation, Jesus foretold of the destruction of Jerusalem. And his words came to pass a few years later in 70 AD when Titus destroyed the city. The war between Israel and Rome began in 66 AD, and General Vespasian was sent there in 66 AD, and he begins marching here from the north, captures all these cities, takes all these prisoners, and they make their way down to Jerusalem, the capital there. However, his campaign was interrupted because Nero committed suicide, and he returned back to Rome to take the throne as the emperor. And he turned that mission over to his son, Titus, who was a remarkable general as well. He swept through the north and came and lay siege to the city of Jerusalem. And as Jesus said, as the weeks went by, the citizens of Jerusalem died from starvation and plague. Meanwhile, the Romans employed all their new war machines, their battering rams, and hurled boulders against the city. The Jewish defenders fought all day and struggled to rebuild the wall at night here. And eventually, the Romans, so this is the city of Jerusalem. This is the Kidron Valley here, the East Gate. This is the Valley of Hinnom or Gehenna here. This is actually where they dump the rubbish. And there's another valley over here. So I hope you find this fascinating. He says, did all this archaeological study on this in my coursework here. The only way you attack is everyone has conquered Jerusalem from the north here, from the northern entrance here. So Vespasian, they break through the north here and they break through the western gate here. But the mass assault comes here from the north. And the Jews retreat and the final stand takes place here in the temple.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586, or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.